I found a little shade early. I was outside doing some barbecuing. We were selling plates here at the house, and the shade burned off on me. I had a shade tree, but the sun whooped the tree, and next thing it whooped was me. So here I am, you know, I'll showered up and cleaned up, and you know, looking the best I can look right now today. The score is 1-0. The sun won, so there's nothing I can do about that. But I'm going to have my guys on tonight. I don't know how many of them are going to join me, but we are trying out a new app that we're going to be using from now on to respect COVID-19, because we don't really need to be sitting up under each other breathing hard like we do. We're all pretty big guys, so you know we breathe hard. So we don't need to be breathing on one another, so we're going to go ahead and use this app, and hopefully things work out. I got my production manager in the background once again, my one and only Queenie. She takes care of me like no other. So I'm sure glad that she found this app for us to do this show on and make things look a lot better. So here we are, live and in living color right here in your living room on JD's Man Cave. So first thing we want to talk about tonight, well, I want to talk about, I say we, but there is no we right now. But first thing I want to talk about is this NBA's return. I've been watching basketball games since earlier this afternoon. They're playing them one after the other since they all got them in, as they say, in a bubble. They're keeping them all in the same place. So they really playing one game after the other. They just get them lined up and tell them, hey, get dressed and come on out here. But I wanted to talk about the fact that the NBA is basically a billion-dollar industry. It's made up of a bunch of billionaires who pay a bunch of millionaires to play basketball. So I'm looking at the situation that the NBA has brought forth with the jerseys that they're letting these guys wear, and the displays, you know, the kneelings and all of that different stuff that the NBA has found itself having to deal with. But I don't personally think that the NBA is doing enough. With the NBA, like I said, billion-dollar industry, with the revenue streams that it generates from television, from arenas, from different organizations that, you know, pay to advertise their stuff in different arenas. The NBA generates a bunch of money. I mean, we actually on the outside probably can't even fathom as much money as these people earn or that each team is worth or makes. But the thing is, I'm thinking that the NBA is not doing enough. Okay, you're letting them wear, you know, different little slogans on their back, still advertising for your, you know, your brand. And what they're doing is they are trying to appease a public who is in a uproar and a cry because of the mistreatment, the abuse, the blatant killing of Black people. I can't just say Black men, Black women. Breonna Taylor got killed too. Sandra Bland got killed. We got so many Black women who were abused by the system, as well as Black men. So what I want to talk about is that they are dealing with a league who is, I don't know the statistics, so I'm not going to say. I know at least 80 to 85% of the entire NBA is made up of Black people or people of color. So I will strongly say that. I know that simply from viewing the games, and anybody can see that. So I don't think that they're doing enough when almost your entire revenue stream is being made off the backs of these young Black brothers. Sure, you're paying them well, that's cool, but when they cry, you should cry. and the NBA is not crying. Only thing NBA cried about is let's hurry up and get back on this court so we can make this money. They were not trying to worry about COVID-19. They were, you know, they do their share of social distancing, but let's be honest, how much social distance can you do when you're running up and down the court with each other, back and forth? You can't stay 6 feet away from a player and let him pull up a jumper. That's not going to work. The score would be 200 to 205. So they have to play defense and get manned up on each other, breathing on one another, touching on one another, all of that. So let's just understand that the NBA nor Donald Trump or anybody else in the United States has a clear-cut idea on how COVID-19 is transferred. So this is really a putting them in a bubble and putting them back on the court is really a guinea pig situation, because they don't know, you know, how they're going to be affected and whether or not they can actually control COVID-19. So this thing solely, I don't want y'all to think, I don't want you NBA fans or anybody to think that the NBA started back playing because the fans missed a game. No, what was missing was the revenue streams, the commercials, the advertisement, the all of those different streams that are generated off the backs of these young black men was starting to dwindle away. And before they let that dwindle completely away, they're going to get back to some form of normalcy to get these players starting back to generate the money that they starting to lose. So don't ever think that the NBA started back because of the fans. The NBA started back because they wanted their bread. And that's just how they are. Everything is a money thing. Speaking of that, I have something else that I'd like to talk about. And I want to know how you people feel about it. Them sending these kids back to school basically unprotected. They are sending these babies back. Now, let's understand that kids are not disciplined enough to social distance. They're not going to stay 6 feet away from each other. They're not going to keep their mask on all day. They're going to pull it down under their nose. They're going to pull it down under their chins. Let's just be honest. You can't get little Junior to do his damn homework, let alone him keep that mask on all day at school. And he's trying to talk to them girls and want them to see his little edge up and how he got a little mustache trimmed and all that. So, you know, this situation is going to be out of hand. And I think that they're going to end up closing these schools again, because our new normal is not going to be something that these kids can adhere to. They just are not disciplined enough. It takes enough discipline for me to do it, and I know better. So imagine a kid at 14, 15 years old, 12, 13, all these different ages. You think that they're going to keep their mask on all day? You think that they're going to social distance? You think they're going to wash their hands? You think that they're going to use hand sanitizer? Are they going to wipe surfaces after, you know, before and after they use them? No, they're not. Let's just be honest. So what they're doing is putting these kids like lab experiments in a petri dish and putting them there. Hey, what's going on? Is that KJ?
Hey, you.
Hey, what's happening, baby?
Ain't nothing.
How you feeling?
I'm good. I'm good. Cool.
I'm glad you joined me. I appreciate you. Hey, I'm gonna go back to this topic because I know you got something. We'll go back to it in a minute. But right now, KJ, I'm talking about this petri dish and this lab experiment that they're doing with these kids, sending them back to school and put them in classrooms with each other. And we don't even have a clear-cut idea of how the coronavirus is even spreading. So what I was saying is that these kids are not going to be disciplined enough to social distance and let alone keep your mask on all day long while you're in class. You know, you want them 6 feet apart, you want them hand sanitizing and all that. That's not going to happen.
Right.
What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, as much as this country tries to preach We're all about safety first. We're all about God first. We're all about the Constitution. All of it is a hypocrisy at the end of the day. Because right. At the end of the day, the only thing that runs this country is the almighty dollar.
Hey,
they're not. See, they want to say it's all about safety first. Well, if it was about safety first, we'd be sending these kids back in the first place like this.
Exactly.
But with that said, I've seen the setup that they got for the kids in school, the way they got the plexiglass around the desk so there can't be no interactions around you or whatever. But what you're not acknowledging is, okay, little Bobby may sit at that desk for first period. Little Bobby got to get up, and somebody else going to sit there for second period. And little Bobby going to another desk. And then third period, in other words, this thing that they got set up, you're still cycling kids in and out of these desks. You're still cycling kids in and out of these classrooms. There's no way you can prevent it from spreading if you got people interacting with each other like that. But it's all just a hoax and a fluke. You know what I'm saying? I mean, honestly, I don't have any school-age kids, and you don't either. But at the end of the day, if I did, dude, I would be very much against even putting my kid back in public school right now because of this stuff, bro.
Because the risk is too great. I mean, the risk-reward factor is too great right now. You're sending your child back. And not only that, that kid goes to school. Let's say he contracts the coronavirus and brings it home. Then you got mixed families where you have elderly people living in the house. You have that are most, highly susceptible to get, next thing you know, grandma dead. And you done found out a week later that Junior boy had COVID the whole time. But it affects Junior like it did grandma because grandma is elderly. You see what I'm saying? So The fact is that everybody is affected by COVID-19 in different ways. And you know that firsthand. So, I mean, we've seen it. We've experienced it. We have friends and family who have suffered with it. And everybody was affected differently. So
what's crazy is the fact that the government, between the U.S. Treasury and the money they can get allocated to them from foreign countries, the U.S. government has enough money to keep this country afloat without the job market being open wide all the way back up and without classrooms being all open. In other words, if they wanted to shut everything down for, say, the rest of this year and try their best to get a foothold on this COVID-19, the money is there and available for them to do that. They are just so preoccupied with not focusing on the general safety of the public so much as focusing on the bottom line financially. Okay, we got the money to make America function, but we're not worried about America functioning. We want to make sure the people that have money continue to get money. So they just worried about the rich getting richer and show no concern whatsoever for the general public. You know what I'm saying? It's all just a money grab, bro. That's all it is.
You got to understand something too. The situation is about the businesses and the what do they call it? The businesses and the economic complex staying afloat. Now, what they want to do is they want to keep consumers consuming, and to do that, they got to get these stores and stuff open back up, and people back out spending bread. So they want you to go back to work so you can make some money and get back in these stores and keep this economy rolling like it has been rolling. They're trying to avoid any type of depression or anything in our economic balance right now. Because if it goes much longer, I can foresee, a economic unbalance happening. Because people are not going to be out spending money and buying things and going. They need the consumer.
But that's my point, though. That's what I was just saying. They have enough money to where the economy doesn't have to go through that. There's enough funds available to where you can allocate certain money for businesses, big and small. You have enough money to allocate certain funds to the, you know how much they're giving in Canada? Giving in Canada right now per month for their citizens during this COVID-19. They're giving their citizens $3,000 per month. No, my bad. Not Canada. Yeah, in Canada. They're giving them $3,000 per month. They gave us one $1,200 stimulus check. Right. They're giving their citizens $3,000. We have the richest and most thriving economy in the country. I mean, in the world. All of these countries, other countries, are giving businesses the money they need to either stay afloat or at least pay whatever monthly overhead they have. Right. It's not about the money. If the economy go bad, it's because the government let it go bad. So a lot of these businesses that fall in, they have the money to give them. They have the money to give them, but they keep, case in point, I'm going to say this. When this first hit back in March, and they started shutting stuff down, and the Senate got together, they tried to figure out how they were going to address it. One of the first things on the table was money. The taxpayers, all of the money that they're giving to the public, that's money that we work for. That's money they took out of our taxes. They took 63% of that money and gave it to major corporations and multi-billionaires. They gave the rest and broke it down and gave $1,200 per household in America. They gave the money, they gave the $1,200 to the people that worked for it and gave the majority of the money for the people that were already paid. They have the money. They're not putting it where it needs to be put. They keep trying to make sure these rich folks can maintain and keep having their money coming in, and we'll just give the general public what we can when we can. That's why if the economy go bad, that's why it's going bad. It's not going bad from a lack of funds. The money is there.
Well, you know who your president is, right? And the Senate, House and the Senate, who they controlled by. So there you go. Get out and vote. That's all I can tell you. Get out and vote some of these clowns out of there, and we may be able to get some things, you know, changed in our government. Because right now, let me tell you something, there is a blatant disregard for the common man in the United States right now.
Yes, sir.
Especially if the common man is a black common man. Let's just talk about that, too, because we are pretty much in the United States history, black people have always been dehumanized. And let me tell you what happens when you dehumanize something. You can easily misuse it. When something is just dehumanized, you don't feel that bad when you don't treat it right. So that's why white America has always vilified the black man. First of all, they vilified the entire black race after that. Now, first, they had to start with the black man being the cause, and that justifies the way that they treat the black man in our society. That's why we're so heavily adjudicated. We're so heavily incarcerated. We're so heavily savagely being mistreated by the law enforcement agencies in the United States, where they're supposed to be protecting and serving. That's not how they police us. They police us as savages first. They come in to crack our schools and break everything up. Why do you think that you can even tell in our elementary school, when five or six young black men get together and they're hanging out by the water fountain, one of them teachers gonna come with a, "Hey man, y'all break this up." They don't want us getting together and figuring nothing out. So they keep us separated and keep us confused with the laws and the policies that they implement upon us. So that's just part of what I think the entire system's problem is. But we have to get back to a understanding that In order for us to ever get equal rights and equal opportunities, first of all, we're going to have to be viewed as a human being first and foremost. Like I said, it has always throughout history, we have been dehumanized since slavery. So, and like I said, it's easy to miss something that you have that you don't see as human value. That's why we're so easily mistreated and so many, you know, even from stemming from after we got out of slavery, the Jim Crow laws that we had to live up under. Now, it, you know, it says equal rights for all men, but you have to understand something with the context of when that was written. Back then, black people were not even considered men. And a matter of fact, a lot of white folks weren't considered men. That's not what, when they were talking about men, they were talking about rich, land-owning white folks. They had the power to vote and move legislation. They weren't talking about those poor white folks who didn't have nothing. The ones that worked on plantations as overseers and all that. They weren't talking about them. They were talking about those rich landowners had the power. Those were the men that the Constitution talked about. And if they were talking about only some white men and not other white men, then you know dadgum well they weren't talking about our black behind being all men are created equal. They were definitely not talking about us. So we have to get back to get a culture in the United States where black folks are at least, first of all, seen as human beings.
So how do you suggest we do that?
Well, we have to get some black legislators in there and policymakers who push an agenda that breeds that type of culture. And we got to vote them in there, and we got to be knowledgeable about who we're voting for and understand the black voting power. There's no president who has been elected without winning the black vote. I mean, Donald Trump is an anomaly, but in the past, you had to get a majority of the black vote because we have power.
But I guess I'm playing devil's advocate. Okay, let me ask this question then. If that's the case, based on what you just said, if the majority, if not all presidents, with the exception of Donald Trump, have
won the black vote,
have been voted in on the strength of the black vote, yet we still dealing with what we're dealing with, how much power was there in the vote then? If we're getting who we're voting for in the White House, then we still dealing with this nonsense.
Let me explain something to you. We, as black people, don't collectively get out and vote anyway. We don't vote as a big group. Now those Hispanics, the gays, and all these other different organizations, they get out and mass vote. See, because they know the power, and they're not going to put nobody in there who ain't going to push their agenda. Now, they know the power of their vote. You have so many, man, let me tell you something. It hurt my heart when Obama's first term, when he got elected, they were covering how many black people were getting out and voting because Obama was running for president. So they were at the polling places. There were so many black people who were in their 70s, 80s, that were saying that this was their first time ever voting in their life. Brother, do you know how disheartening and really stupid that is for you to be 80-something years old and you've never voted?
If that's the case, if we weren't voting, then how were the presidents getting in the White House on our vote?
Well, the ones who did, I'm talking about the majority of the ones who did vote had to win the majority of the black votes. That were cast. Now I'm not saying that every black person, you got to win 80% every black person in the United States. You have to win 80 something to 90 something percent of the black people who actually got out and voted. You see what I'm saying? There's a difference between that. Now you have
no Democratic president has won without getting more than 88% of the black vote.
There you go. There you go.
Exactly. Again, I'm not disagreeing with that, but I guess my point is, and we hear it every year, not just for presidential elections, but local government, for senates, right, for council seats, and all that. We always hear people preaching vote. And I'm not anti-vote. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is, you can't make me believe that in 45 presidential seats, well, more than 45 presidents, but 45 presidents, but more than 45 terms, put it like that.
Right.
That at some point, a candidate won the presidency who spoke the good speech and said all the right words to get the backing of the black person. Yet here we are in August 2020, and we still dealing what we're dealing with. So if we at some point have gotten somebody in the White House who supposedly had our best interest at heart, yet we're still at the bottom of the food chain, how powerful is voting? Well, because KJ, there's nothing changing.
KJ, one thing you have to understand is that, sure, we vote, but the Electoral College is who elects presidents. And think about this. Hillary Clinton actually won the popular vote and beat Trump by more than 2 million votes. Hillary Clinton beat Trump by more than 2 million popular votes, but she did not carry the Electoral College.
Right. And let me explain something to you also, KJ. Let me explain something to you. I'm just going to say it, Steve, and y'all can be mad at me for saying it, but I'm just going to say it. Black voters are probably the most uneducated voters that go to the poll.
There's nothing to be wrong about that. I mean, what I think to an extent, yeah, you are right. But you have to think about historically, have we been educating ourselves and educating others on how to vote? See, exactly. they pulled a stunt on us in Texas. See, it used to be you can go in there and vote a straight ticket for the president. You go in there, you say Democrat, and you get everybody that's under him, and that's what's supposed to help your president. You know, because that's how the Republicans were voting. That's how they were going and vote. They were voted straight ticket, and they would be in and they'd be out. That's why when you look at those Republican zonings, they didn't have long lines. They had just as many people voting, but they didn't have long lines because they go in there, they voted straight ticket, they in, they out. But the Democrats will go in and try and pick and choose people here and there to vote instead of going in. And that's why our lines were always so long. It took so long to do it because people in there picking and choosing, going down the row. Do I want this one? Do I want that one? Scratching their head, scratching their behind. And folks in them other communities was going in there, hitting that ticket button and walking smooth out.
Walking snap out of there. You're absolutely right. But let me say this. Let me say this, KJ and Steve. We have to understand that black folks, we go in there undereducated, going into the polls. We have not held these candidates up to certain standards. We simply vote out of tradition.
That's and blind loyalty.
Like when we voted, I'm going to just say, for instance, Bill Clinton. Black folks got behind Bill Clinton and voted him right in, right? Yeah. Bill Clinton right in the White House and put up the three strikes rule. Bill Clinton's presidency turned the prison systems in the United States into what bosses that they are today. Because he was three strikes. You're going to do 87% of your time. He implemented so many different rules that were vetted against, you know, he continued the war on drugs, that we all know that there were harsher penalties on crack than there was on powder cocaine. He filled the prisons up under his administration. And we voted him in twice.
Okay. So and I don't remember because that was a long time ago. Who did Clinton run against when he won his presidential seat?
Who was the Republican?
If you don't remember, it's not no trivial question. If you don't remember, you don't remember. Because obviously I don't remember. You know what I'm saying?
Get out.
Nobody ever remembers who comes second and third place in the race.
Point
I
is,
always remember the first person.
My point is, when is there ever a good candidate that has our best interest at heart? Democrats do nothing for us. Republicans do nothing for us. I'm not asking this as a rhetorical question. I'm legitimately trying to find the gist of the vote movement. What is the purpose of voting if none of the candidates have our best interest at heart? Regardless of if 80% of the black public, if 80% of the black community voted, and they voted legitimately, they did their research, they ran down a laundry list of what this candidate stands for, his position on this, his position on that, so forth and so on. At the end of the day, none of them, Democrat or Republican, do anything consistently to change the race issues in America.
Right.
So what inspiration or what is there to motivate a black person to go vote that doesn't normally vote if at the end of the day we still get dumped on?
Here's the problem, KJ. I can answer that, JD, real quick. Here's the problem, KJ. KJ, we don't put our money behind our vote. That's the problem. When we get money, our money don't change hands as many times as it does in the Asian community and the Hispanic community and the Indian community. When they put money in their community, that money changes hands more than 20 times. Before 27 times, on average, the regular dollar would change hands 27 times on average in an Asian community before it ever leaves out of the community.
Our money
changed hands one time, and it's out of our pocket. It's out of our community.
I totally disagree, because when that money changes hands, it changes from one Asian to another.
That's what I'm saying.
Or one Indian to another.
That's what I'm saying.
Our money goes straight from us to everybody else.
That's the point I'm saying. Their money changes hands 27 times within their community before it leaves and goes out. As soon as we get it, our money goes to it goes out of our community. But their money changes hands more than 27 times before it ever leaves their community.
All you got to do is do who you see in line for them Jays? Who you see in line for them Jordan? Not them white folks. Not them Asians. Not them Indians. You see us standing in line, ready to give our money up for $200-something for a pair of sneakers.
That's only worth $8.50.
Okay. Yeah, that's the craziest thing ever. So that's just one of the dynamics in our community that we need to...
The reason why I kept asking that question is because now we get into the gist of what really needs to be done. Okay, when I say we, I'm not just talking about us three. It's a lot of... When election time rolled around, you got a lot of celebrities... You got a lot of local government officials that go vote. Okay, but all you're doing is telling the black community to vote. With in turn, what you need to be doing is bringing the black community together collectively and making sure that, okay, we'll just say Mike Johnson is running for presidency for the next election. And Mike Johnson, his platform is police reform. His platform is making sure that the disparaging number of people being incarcerated isn't so swayed toward minorities. Mike Johnson is making sure that River Oaks is being policed by the police just as much as South Park and Fifth Ward. And those are the platforms he's standing on. Well, somebody that is a respectable and reputable voice for the black community goes to Mike Johnson and tell Mike Johnson, okay, these are the platforms that you're standing on. These are the issues that you're making it a point to address if you're elected as the next president. We can assure you that you will get the majority of the black vote if you legitimately follow through on these issues that you're saying you're going to follow. So now he has a choice. If he can convince us that he's going to do that and he gets into the White House, now the ball is in our court. We have the leverage because now his feet going to get held to the fire. And if he does it, obviously that's a win for us. And if he doesn't, Then whoever the next candidate is, okay, Terry Mitchell, you see, we got Mike Johnson in the White House last time because of our vote. He said he's going to do, or he was going to do such and such. He didn't follow through with it. We're not falling for the okey-doke again. So if you want our vote, we need to make some, and then that, like, or I think that was you, Bobby, though. That's when the money comes into play. Because right. Once they start losing those dollars, then moving forward, candidates moving forward, okay, not only are these dudes going to give me their vote, but if I don't follow through with what I'm saying, that's money out of my pocket.
KJ, then, what you need to KJ, here's what you here's what you have to understand about politics. Yeah, it's about money and all that, but it's not one individual, it's a party. See, when that president
I understand that thoroughly. I'm just dumbing it down for the sake of our conversation. Yeah.
And that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to make sure I dumb it down for everybody so they can understand that, yeah, you hold it's one man who's the figurehead for the party, but it's those individuals in Congress who make laws that we have to hold them accountable for because they make those laws. They're the ones who put those laws in place and they have to bring it to the president for a final vote.
Right.
See, it's the congressmen and the senators that we have to hold them accountable to, those district representatives. We got to hold them accountable. The Al Greens and the
Sheila Jackson Lees.
We got to hold them accountable. See, because ultimately they're the ones who bring that stuff into play. And then it gets voted on in the Senate or Congress. Then it goes to a Senate for a final vote. And then it goes to a president for ratification. And if if the president chooses to veto it, then it goes back and it has to be overcome with Congress with a plurality, two thirds plurality or a half plus one, whichever it calls for. But see, what we got to do is we don't hold them people accountable because, again, like you said, it's those dollars. It's those fundraisers. It's that money that we put in the communities and we put that money back in these folks. And when you vote somebody in, well, they in there. So now it's pretty much, well, they can pretty much do what they got to do and tell you where they didn't have the help in Congress to do it. So, KJ, I'm sorry, man, but that bill you wanted me to pass, I can't get it passed. I'm sorry. You know, y'all voted me in and I tried, but I couldn't get it done because of X, Y, Z. And so now we sitting here with boo-boo on the chin because we done voted this fool in with promises that he was going to get this done and didn't get it done. I couldn't get it done because he couldn't hold up his end of the deal or we didn't hold them congressmen who we voted in as well to help that president get stuff done that we needed done. See, that's right. Why people were mad at Obama, talking about Obama ain't do nothing to help black people and this and that. Well, he couldn't because when he was in office, there was a Republican Congress and Senate. See, everybody went in and hit
Obama. And
they
made it a point to shoot down everything he tried to run across the table.
Because, KJ, we went in and I'm talking about people who didn't know about the vote, they went in right. And just picked Obama and walked out. They didn't do a straight ticket. That man had no help. That man had no how does a president win with a vast majority but didn't have nobody to help him? The Congress and Senate didn't match. Because people didn't vote. They didn't know how to vote.
Right. And that goes back to something that KJ was trying to, like I was saying, we don't understand the fact that the local elections affect our day-to-day life more than the presidential election.
Right.
Saying we got to get the judges, the mayors,
city councilmen
and all that in place first that are pushing our agenda. If you want to talk about your day-to-day problems that you have in your life, that affects your day-to-day more so than Donald Trump. You know, of course, Donald Trump affects it because he's the president of the United States and he has the ultimate decision-making power. But your day-to-day is really governed and pushed along by the local elections, and we don't even get out and put our power into that.
Yep, that's the point I was making about not knowing how to vote.
You know, we sit back and talk about, well, what good is it going to do for me to vote? It's going to do way more good for you to go vote than for you to sit home in the living room and watch Young and the Restless all day and then wait on the polls. You could have went out and helped the situation. Sometimes a lot of these people voted in by slim margins. You know, you could have been the deciding factor, but then soon as the person that you think shouldn't have won do something, then you want to complain. It's too. I tell people all the time, you ain't voting, shut up and take.
But then you also have to understand there's other factors that play into minorities not voting, obviously, and minorities, primarily African Americans, not being educated in who to vote for. And it really does down to some degree, in large part, goes back to how we're brought up. We're not brought up. I mean, you have so many, the majority of us, with the exception of some, are so busy that just trying to make it day to day. We're not in a position to follow politics the way we should. We're not in a position routinely to keep track of political figures and their platforms. You got a majority of us just basically struggling to put food on the table. They don't teach us in the school system.
Bruh, that's an excuse. You can anybody.
No, that's a fact. You can call it what you want, but that's a fact.
You got 24 hours in a day, just like them white folks got 24 hours in their day. Why?
Not everybody, brother. Not everybody.
Educate yourself. Everybody. And you talking about, bruh, let me tell you something. Black folks waiting on the public school system that don't want you to better yourself in the first place. Black folks sitting around waiting for them to educate you, you ain't gonna never get educated. Why in the world would your oppressor educate you to make you to help raise your status? Understand that when it comes to public school.
I'm not disagreeing with that, but what I'm saying is if you're working two jobs,
let me finish.
And you're gone all the time, you don't have any other option but public schooling. If you don't have the financial means to put them in a better situation, what are they supposed to do?
Go to the damn library. Google it. That's what you're supposed to do. Educate your damn self. Master don't beat us no more for reading. So that's what you're supposed to do. Buy books and put them in your house. Get you a library instead of having magazines all over the damn house. That's what you're supposed to do. Any other questions on what you're supposed to do?
Instead, you still ain't
answered that one,
but I'm just not
going to
respond.
Okay, I know you're not, because I hit you with the facts. Yeah, facts hurt sometimes, but they hit like a baseball bat.
Hold on,
y'all. Let me get with you. Somebody at the door. let me take a pause for the call.
Go use the bathroom or something. I understand. But anyway, Steve.
Well, JD, there's one more thing too you got to understand too. What the hell was that?
He had a bomb. He had a bomb moving right there in that chair.
Where you didn't gut punched him?
What? Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, JD. What we have to understand is that when we go in, we can vote. We can early vote too. You know, if we can't, but if we can go stand in line to get some tennis shoes, we can stand in line to vote.
Exactly.
I'll get you.
And if we can't make it to the voting polls and on election day, you know, because we can't take off and we got other things going on. Well, there's also early voting, so we need to be able to either get in and vote early or be able to get online because everybody has a computer at their fingertips. It's called your cell phone. You can fill out a form for early voting on your phone, and a ballot can be mailed to your address, and you can mail it right back out free of charge.
And not only that, Steve, they have voting on Saturdays, Sundays, all during the 7 days a week. You can't be working every day and working all day every day. If they do, you need to fill out another application somewhere. That's all I can tell you. And you got that require that you living above your means anyway. You need somewhere to cut back on some things in your life.
Okay, since we're talking about
stop smoking dope. Stop all these different vices that we have in our life. Yeah, so you cut back on some stuff.
Hey, so since we're talking about voting, my daughter brought up something. We were, you know, we had this long trip back from Alvin, from that Bayou safari, and my daughter brought up. We were talking about the president, and she brought up voting that this guy's not gonna want to give up the White House. And I like, you know what? That sounds very, very true. That in the first time in history, we may have a president who may decide to have a coup not to give up the White House. See, in every other part of the country or the world, there has always been some kind of major coup when it comes to a president or a leader giving up power. You know, Saddam Hussein was in power more than 20 years. He didn't want to give it up. Fidel Castro didn't want to give it up. What's his name in Africa, in Uganda, didn't want to give it up. What's, they made a movie about that dude. What's his name? Idi Amin. He didn't want to give it up. You know, it's a whole bunch of folk that didn't want to give up power when it came time to give up power when the election time came. And now maybe in the first time in American history, we may have a president who is going to try to do the exact same thing. If you look at what he's doing now, talking about postponing the election because of COVID. Do you think this might have been a long-standing plan to stay in power by dismantling everything because we knew an election was coming up and that we could have a worldwide and a nationwide pandemic that we could stop the voting process?
Right.
I mean, does it not seem logical? And then he gets on Twitter and the TV every other day. He gets on with some kind of fear mongering. Do you not think that he'll be able to have somebody in the military, or that he'll strike up enough fear that the military and the National Guard may take up ranks with on his side to try to inflict some kind of martial law to keep people in line while this man does not want to give up the president's seat in come January?
He'll say that
the vote was fake news. It was fake. It's fraud. It was this and that. It's coming.
I'll tell you. I hope he buck the system. I promise you, I do. I hope he buck. And I hope they run in there like they do us and beat him with nightsticks. Put him in a what they call it? That move? That
that put in a yoke?
No, they hog time. Beat him with them and towed him out of there like he's some luggage. I hope he try to buck the system. I want it just for the level of drama that it's gonna cause in the United States. I hope he buck the system. I'm all for it. Buck him, Donald. Buck him, Donald. Buck him. I want to see him get beat up in the Oval Office. I want to see him get hauled like they do black people every damn day in the streets in the United States. I want him to get a taste of his own damn medicine. That's just me, personally. I may be dead wrong, but I promise you, I'm going to be at the polls voting, and I don't care if Daffy Duck is running against Donald Trump. I'm voting for Daffy Duck. Damn that. If that's the only choice I got is Daffy Duck and Donald Trump, Daffy. And that's just how I feel, brother. But I'm looking at Joe Biden being a viable candidate that will help and push the black agenda. I'm also hoping that Joe Biden brings in a black female as his running mate. What do y'all think about that?
No. Let me tell you why. What he's going to do with that, he's going to further push people to vote for Trump because they're not going to want a repeat of Biden Obama. And let me tell you what I mean by that. You got some people who are not experienced enough to bring a country together like that, let alone who have a relationship internationally. Now, here's what I mean by that. The best person, I think, for it would be Elizabeth Warren. Let me tell you why. She has experience on the Beltway in Congress that spans 20 years or more. She's got friends on both sides, Democrat, Republican, and Independent. And she is known internationally. They know her in other nations. She's dealt with other nations. A Kamala Harris and a Susan Rice, they're good, but you can make them attorney generals and put one on the Supreme Court. That's what you do. That's what you do, because Ruth Bader Ginsburg is holding on right now until they get a viable replacement for her. That's what needs to happen.
She's
and the reason why I'm saying that, think about how these other countries are going to feel having to make negotiations not with just a woman, but a woman of color. And right. I'm just saying that being real politically. Now, I'm not saying they can't do the deal. I'm not saying they're not intelligent enough. But I'm looking at how other nations run their business and how they do things culturally and how they feel.
Exactly. I don't think the United States is ready, nor do I think the world is ready, just like you're saying, for a black female vice president to be representing the United States. Now, it would be lovely for us, but we're not going to go from Trump to that. You know, that's right. Like, that's too extreme, and our country is not ready for that, nor is the world ready for it.
So again, no shade to Kamala Harris or Susan Rice. No shade to those ladies. No shade, because I think that any woman can do a job intellectually just as well as a man. I believe that. But what I'm looking at is what we'll have to deal with culture-wise across the world and how people will view it. Just like that guy who was running for president for the Republican Party who was gay. Muslim nations would not have any dealings with that man. Asian nations would not have any dealings with that man because of his sexual preference, because culturally they look down on it in that part of the world. So yeah, it wouldn't happen.
Opening the gate, he would not be accepted. That's weird. You're
that's right. It would not be accepted by no Muslim country. It wouldn't be accepted.
Get off the plane over there.
Exactly. He would not be allowed to get off the plane nor cross the international borders. Exactly. And again, I'm not saying because of his sexuality that he couldn't do the job. I'm looking at how other cultures view sexuality in their cultures, in religiously, philosophically, you know, it's just something that they frown upon. Just like you in certain countries, you and Queenie, y'all couldn't stay in the same hotel room because you have a Christian marriage. In a Muslim country, your marriage is not recognized because it's a Christian marriage. In Tunisia, you and Queenie couldn't stay in the same hotel room. Y'all could not stay in the same hotel room. You could not walk in public and hold hands.
Well, I ain't going
to. I'm just saying, because you have a Christian marriage and it is not recognized in that country.
To be honest, though, even with what you're saying, that would hinder his effectiveness as a president. So he really is not a viable candidate for the presidency, because we have to understand, like you said, the dynamics of, you know, dealing with different countries. He would not be effective at all. So why would we even put him in office? So he's not a viable candidate for the presidency, period. Being a gay man, period. That's not going to happen.
And nothing against him personally or politically. It's just that how it's viewed, his sexual orientation would be viewed on an international stage with those countries who look down upon it.
Right. And like I say, we have to take all that into consideration when we're dealing with that.
That's why I'm saying I think Joe Biden is going to make a grave mistake. Now, here's a man who is trying to not just win our vote, but he's trying to keep to a promise that he made. And he said that he would have a black woman by his side.
Right.
I think that's very admirable that he would want to do that, to stick to his promise. But I think what should have happened is he should have had a meeting with the black caucus and then tell them, hey, look, let's look at how this is going to play out internationally and what I can do to make sure we get, you know, you get what you want. If I put this person in there, this is how these nations will look at us as a country, and I can do this. But what I can do on the domestic side, I can make this person, I can put this person on the Supreme Court. I can put this one as the Attorney General. I can put this one as this top cabinet thing. I can put this brother. I can take Colin Powell and put him back in and get him back on the Armed Forces Committee, put him back in over that. You know, you look at things that you can do to put people in places that can affect some real, real power and change.
Right.
But internationally, we have to think bigger than ourselves. And a lot of times we don't think outside the box. We don't think no further than what we can see.
Exactly.
And I think that's our biggest problem, because we haven't been taught to do so. My dad was a union president. All I knew growing up was union voting in union. That's all I knew growing up. That's all I knew. You know, when I got my first job working with you, when I got my job with UPS, hey man, they got a union, better get in. Yes, sir. Got my teaching job. Hey, teachers got a union, better get in. You know, hey man, you better, you know, hey, the people talk to you about being a union steward, you better be a union steward and run your building. Yes, sir. I did it. So now, you know, we've got to be able to think that again, like KJ was saying, we got to make sure that we educate ourselves and our people about voting and what it means. And again, not just nationally, but locally. We gotta help out at home. We gotta help out at home. Right. And a lot of times, bro, we not helping out at home. And that extends into what we do as men. A lot of men ain't helping out at home. A lot of men don't know how to be men at home.
Running from our responsibilities. I always talk about that. It's always what I'm talking about. But see, the thing is, you understood, you know, at an early age, that union meant power. You know what I'm saying? Those unions gave you certain powers because you belonged to them. See, we need
And there was power in numbers, and there was power in money.
We need to use that union mentality in our communities and understand the power that being fortified and together will bring us, rather than us diluting our vote by, you know, not understanding what candidate we should be voting for, not educating ourselves on it, and all of that different stuff. It dilutes our vote, even though and not only that, sitting at home dilutes our votes even more, because we have so many people who are nonchalant about voting because they don't feel like their vote counts or my agenda that I'm looking for ain't on the ballot this year, so I ain't gonna vote at all. That's
right. You know what the biggest myth is, JD?
What's that, man?
The biggest myth is I've been to jail, I can't vote. That's the biggest myth.
Long as you're not on paper, long as you're not still on parole, you can vote. The day after you get off parole, you're eligible to vote.
And see, a lot of us don't know that. They think, man, I'd have been to prison. You know, I did 25, I did 10, I did a bid. Man, I'm a felon. I can't vote. No, you're a felon. You're considered a felon in the system. Once you have paid your debt to society, you are no longer a felon.
Exactly.
But see, that's the mentality. People don't know.
We Steve, let me tell you something about us that I have noticed. And I'm 51 years old. I've been voting since I was 18, since I was eligible to vote.
Right.
We go to the polls like sheep. You know, we just follow along. We don't really know what we're going to vote for. We don't do our homework beforehand. We don't put a mirror up to the candidates that we're going in there and vote for. We don't find out their real true agendas. We don't research them. We just go in there and vote and then walk out of there. Like you said, we go in there and hit straight Democrat. Some black voters, Steve, don't even realize that the Republican Party is the party that freed the slave.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and that's crazy that they don't realize that Abraham Lincoln was a Republican.
Here's something someone broke me down today, and I didn't even think about it. You know, I found out, JD, that I'm a Trump supporter. Did you know that? Let me show you. You know what? I bet you're a Trump supporter, too. Let me show you. Hey, did you get some stimulus money?
Yeah.
Did you turn it in? Did you give it back?
Hey, look here. Let me tell you something, Steve.
Well then, see, at that point you took what he gave you. It makes you a supporter because you supported his initiative. And you know what? And I was like, damn, you know, man, I don't like Trump. There's no way I can't stand this man. I hate his politics. I hate the very thing he stands on because it the majority of it stems on racism.
Let me explain something to you though, Steve. I'm not really a Trump supporter, but I do support $1,200 Christian $100 bills. I do support that. I don't care if I was going to send them to me, I wasn't sending them back. As long as I knew they were spending in the store,
you're
not getting that bread back. So no, I'm not a Trump supporter. I don't support that clown on nothing that he does. But I do support Benjamin Franklin and seeing him 12 times made my day. So no, I'm not.
Amen.
I'm a Benjamin Franklin supporter.
Yeah, but you know what? And but that's the thing I was saying. You know, I said I don't support the man's politics, but I could not help but support his initiatives. Some of his initiatives, okay. But you know, but other countries are doing more. Now maybe we're not doing as much more because maybe our population is larger. But you know, places like Alaska gives their citizens, you know, they get oil revenue money. They get money off the oil that's there. The citizens of Alaska get money off their oil reserves.
Yeah.
You know, they get a stipend.
Right. We've come down to about 3 minutes left, brother. Yeah. I've enjoyed this conversation that we've had about the politics of our raggedy United States and the disarray and foolishness that we are being put through. And all I can say is pray, brother. That's the only person who can turn this thing around, because we have fought for so long and we've had so many leaders come in and try to right this train and put it on the right track, but yet still we still derailing here and there. Every year we get a bunch of derailments, and we still have not been able to right this train on the track. So I'm just gonna keep praying my life and keep pushing and keep educating myself and those that are around me in my household. So I ask that you do the same, brother, and I know you are, because you are educated by heart. So go ahead, Steve, and I will see you next Saturday.
For sure, if I don't see you before then. But here's the thing, though, brother. One thing we got to be able to, we have to make sure we remember and keep close to our heart. Since Malcolm and Martin, since we had those professors come in and teach us, since those professors, Malcolm and Martin, left us, all we've had is a bunch of substitute teachers.
Exactly.
So I'm advocating our book, The 48 Laws of Black Empowerment. Please look it up on Amazon, people, and get it and get some understanding for what you can do in your community and your household. 48 Laws of Black Empowerment.
And I thank you for that read, because I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I'm finding that book hard to put down.
Even if you just take it to the bathroom and read it when you're in there, I mean, it's something powerful to think about, man. When you come up out of there, even just in your leisure, you come away with something. It's not just some trash to fill your head with some garbage. It's something to fill your mind with some thought.
Yeah, it's definitely thought-provoking, Steve. And like I said, I want to thank you for that read, brother. And I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And I don't know if you saw that other book that I got, too.
Yeah, I'm ordering that tonight.
Grab a look at that. But like I said, man, we as Black people, we got to educate ourselves. We cannot expect the oppressor to educate us. That within itself is psychologically crazy as hell. You think
it's
so?
Definition of insanity.
Huh?
It's the definition of insanity.
Exactly. You think somebody who's trying to keep you down gonna help uplift you? You got to be crazy. So, like I said, Black folks, let's get out there and educate ourselves. Let's bring the power back to our vote. And Steve, I thank you for coming on and staying on, brother. And we'll try to get all the fellas. We're going to use this platform because I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I want to thank my production manager, Queenie, Daniel, for taking care of this for me. And I'll see you next week, Steve. You take care, brother. Stay blessed.
Tell Queen I need that shirt and the 2X, bro.
I got you. No problem.
All right, bro. Later, man. Y'all be blessed, man.
Take care.
You too, y'all, brother.
JD's Man Cave signing off, y'all. See y'all next
week.
Thank you.